job down at the local mill. Worked right up, not a millionaire. I can't pay my bills. The evil man is at my door. They used to call us working class, but we're just not working anymore. Well, I had me a wife, two cars and a boat. Things got bad, now the boat won't float. I don't like it. I'm too proud to be poor.
Folks, and welcome to the July 25th edition of the World Labor Hour here at WEFT Champaign. We broadcast at 90.1 on the FM dial, and you can catch our stream through our website, weft.org, or maybe you use some kind of a tune-in app to catch us on our phone or something like that. Anyway, I want to wish Dave a happy birthday here. Normal host of the show, David Johnson, celebrating a birthday. He's a young man, 29 or something like that.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm here with Bill Gorell and
actually older than Dave.
Yeah, I got a few years on him too. So yeah. One of the founders of the World Labor Hour back in the day. It even had a couple different names over the years, but anyway.
Oh yeah, it started out the Eastern Illinois Labor Journal.
Yeah.
Which people would think was, oh, is that a newspaper?
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, we're here and, celebrating Dave's birthday. So if Dave's listening in out there, we wish him a real happy birthday. So here's Bill with some of our underwriters.
Excuse me. This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs and Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs and Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at the Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, you can visit their website at centraliljwj.org.
That's it.
Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. It's got an old wording here. The World Labor Hour is supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. And the Graduate Employee Organization, or the GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio. That's it.
Yeah, the four of them. And we thank our community partners. You can check out all of WEFT's community partners on our website. Check it out, weft.org, and click on the community partners link up at the top there. And we really do thank them. They do a lot to help keep us all on the air here. So, and we especially thank the four that underwrite the Labor Hour here every Saturday. Good folks.
Yeah.
And we suggest you go by, stop in, support any of the stores or whatever.
For example, if you're a drummer, the next public service announcement, not public service announcement, but underwriting announcement, is for the Surfabilly Freakout show later today, which I definitely got to listen to.
Yeah, but we moved it to, to Thursday nights now.
Oh, okay. Well, this is still here. But anyway, it's Skin Tins Drum Shop, which is owned by a union painter.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize Terry was a painter.
That's right.
Yeah.
He paints buildings.
Wonderful. Yeah. And so Paul's got
to stop by and buy a drumstick or something. I don't know. Paul's, I suppose you got to buy two of them, I suppose.
You know. Well, you know, one might, you know, maybe if you broke one or something, you might need the second one to make the pair. But, you know, Paul's got a good underwriter too on his show, World Harvest Foods.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff, you know, so. So yeah, once again, we thank all of our underwriters here. So. I got a news story here that I wanted to get into a little bit.
Okay.
It's about a big victory for fast food workers this week in New York. And it says the Fight for 15 effort for higher pay won a major victory on Wednesday when a wage board formed in May by Governor Andrew Cuomo proposed raising the minimum wage for fast food workers in New York to $15 an hour. The increase would be fully phased in by the end of 2018 for workers in New York City, and by mid-2021 for those in the rest of the state. Currently, fast food pay in New York is about $9 an hour. It says under New York law, the governor can appoint a wage board composed of business, labor, and public representatives to recommend raises in occupations where pay is judged to be too low to support a basic living. The state labor commissioner can then order the increase without legislative approval. In the past, the process has been used to raise pay for tipped workers and young workers. So the acting state labor commissioner, Mario Mussolino, is expected to promptly approve the board's recommendation, which applies to about 140,000 workers in New York who are employed by restaurants with 30 or more locations nationwide. The first of the incremental increases to $10.50 within the city and to $9.75 elsewhere is expected in December. The raise itself, however, is likely to be only one of several outcomes of the board's action. A fast food wage of $15 an hour could push up wages in New York more broadly because it sets a new bar for retailers, home care agencies, and other low-wage employers to meet or exceed. It also paves the way for an even more muscular use of such boards in New York, both to raise pay in other low-wage occupations and in other geographic areas, like New York City, where the state's minimum wage set to reach $9 an hour at this year is clearly not enough to live on. So that was good news there. Also involved with that, actually the CEO for Dunkin' Donuts came out yesterday and said the top executive for Dunkin' Donuts says a $15 an hour minimum wage for fast food workers is absolutely outrageous. So it says again that on Thursday, the New York State's wage board recommended the fast food workers increase. And he says here, it's going to affect small businesses and franchises, Travis said in an interview on CNN. He said it would prevent his multi-billion dollar company from hiring new people. I don't want to sound threatening about that, he added, saying it probably wouldn't force Dunkin' to lay off workers. He said Travis argued that fast food companies are a starting point in the job market, and he said most of the Dunkin' employees on minimum wage are teenagers that are expected to move on to higher-paying jobs. He says he does support a living wage. It's ironic that this gentleman, Nigel Travis, he appears to be like an English dude from the accent that he had.
Well, God, Nigel?
Yeah. It's interesting.
I think so.
Interesting because in 2013, it says Dunkin' brand CEO got plenty of dough in 2013. Travis received $4.2 million in pay, stock options, incentive awards, and perks in 2013. That's up 120% from what he got in 2012. He gained another $21 million exercising stock options, according to the company's annual proxy. They've changed his contract out to December of 2018, upped his salary to $1 million, and the company franchises more than 18,000 Dunkin' Donuts and Baskin-Robbins ice cream locations in nearly 60 countries. Net income jumped more than 35% last year on an 8.5% revenue rise, and it says here investors enjoyed some tasty gains. Total shareholder return was up 50%. So he's been CEO of Dunkin' Donuts since 2009. Listen to this, Bill. Previously, he was CEO of Papa John's Pizza and held senior management spots at Burger King and Blockbuster. You know, Papa John was the guy that was complaining about the Affordable Care Act and how they were going to have to cut back employees' hours under 30 hours a week, and that he was going to have to lay off employees. So it seems like this corporate stuff just feeds on each other.
Well, here's what blows my mind. Yeah, they're talking about people who are barely able to live, you know, have hardly any money at all. So anything that you add can be a pretty big boon. Anything you take away is a really huge loss.
Right.
And they sit and they whine if they, you know, because it's costing them so much money to pay people.
Right. If they have to pay them another quarter an hour or 50 cents an hour,
that's going to break them. They'll still live like kings.
Yes, they will. Yes, they will. I think that's the whole idea behind some of this corporate goofiness is that, you know.
Well, these people, they have no, they're psychotics. They're not just psychopaths. They are psychotics. They're delusional. They're out of touch with reality. There's no way that somebody like them and, the overwhelming majority of people who are running for president right now and, can just relate to even middle class people, much less, you know, really low income. Because I know middle class people, they can't relate to real low income people at all.
We had Kevin on from the Champaign Schools a while back. Oh, it was probably 6 months ago, and he was talking about how these people really were psychotic. That there's tests that they give to these CEOs, and they just write down the list. You know, he says
I think classic. He's talking about psychopaths. Yeah, psychopathy, which is, I'm talking about psychoses, which is delusion.
Yeah.
I think they're delusional.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I'm saying. They're psychotic psychopaths are what they are. But there's just no way that they can, I mean, that's somebody like Jeb Bush. You know, here's how out of touch these people are. Jeb Bush, I don't know where he gets this idea, thinks that it's a real winner to tell people that they have to work more.
Yeah.
And a real winner to say that we're going to take away one of the things that your parents or grandparents at least probably depend on greatly.
Yeah.
And that would be a really good thing for you when you get old.
All right. We're going to talk to, we got a guest calling in here at about 11:30, Dr. Pamela Gronemeyer, and she's going to talk about the 50th anniversary of Medicare coming up.
And Chris Christie, the first thing he said, oh, we need to cut Social Security.
Yeah.
And it just drives me nuts, man, because I keep telling people this, and I want people to spread this word and get this out about the maximum Social Security tax and right. How unfair that is.
Why they capped that at like $125,000?
No, it's $118,300 this year.
Yeah, well, it's been at that level for about 30 years.
Well,
I think,
it's gone up. It goes up a little bit. I don't know if it's a COLA type of increase, but I mean, it's just ridiculous.
So if you make $5 million, you don't pay any more into Social Security than somebody who makes $118,000.
Well, you got to look at the regressivity of the tax. I mean, Bob, you're an independent person, so you're actually writing that 12.4% check, aren't you?
Yeah, they hit you on your tax returns when, you know, self-employment tax there.
Yeah, so all it is for me is a deduction and a theoretical 6-whatever% that I could get if my employer wasn't paying it, but that's just, you know, that's ridiculous because it's, you know, as Paul Muth often says, funds are fungible. Yeah. And there's no guarantee that I would get that extra money on my paycheck if this all went away.
Right.
I was telling a guy yesterday, you know, tell him about this, and I said, you know, there wouldn't be any problem. We could have Medicare for everybody, you know, if we just went ahead and applied this tax to a lot more, okay?
Yeah.
And what he said was, well, they just take it, you know. Go ahead, the government would just go ahead and borrow it and spend it on something else like they keep doing.
Yeah, that's what they've done with a lot of our pensions and stuff like that over the years. They borrowed money out of that, or they just didn't fund them completely, you know.
Right.
Or
borrow
that money.
That's a big issue here.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a court ruling up in Chicago this week. But how about if we take a quick musical break?
Oh, yeah, and those people on those pensions, most of them, unless they worked outside of the public employment for some time, they don't get Social Security.
No Social Security, right. These people are entirely dependent. Why don't we come back and do that story, but I got a song here I wanted to play. This is TPP. This is a song kind of dedicated to Dave. This is Corporate Power Tool of the 1%. So here's a quick musical break for you.
Yeah. politicians love you, but we're the 99%, and we'll show you what we can do.
And we're back here on the World Labor Hour, WEFT Champaign, 90.1 on the FM dial.
What are you worth?
Not much. TPP, it's all about secrecy. And, Bill, you got any news stories, or I'm going to do this one about the Chicago pensions here.
Yeah, I think that segues right in. We're talking about Social Security, and it's retirement-related thing. Definitely.
So, right. On Friday, a Cook County judge threw out a 2014 law aimed at reducing multi-billion dollar shortfalls in two Chicago pension funds, a decision city officials have said could leave the retirement accounts insolvent with little more than a decade or lead to massive tax increases. So Judge Rita Novak wrote that the changes to pensions for some 61,000 current and retired municipal employees and laborers are unconstitutional. She also said workers and retirees who have been paying more into their retirement funds or have been receiving less in benefits since the law took effect on January 1st are entitled to recoup their losses too. So union leaders and former city workers who gathered outside the courtroom declared it a win for retirees and workers who have consistently made their contributions to the retirement accounts, even when the city for years did not. It says here, we were promised something, says Charles Lamanto, who worked for the city's streets and sanitation department for 28 years. We signed a contract. So, of course, Chicago's corporation counsel, Stephen Patton, says the city plans to appeal. So says here, Chicago has the worst funded pension systems of any major U.S. city, with a roughly $20 billion shortfall in its four accounts and another approximately $7 billion debt in fund for teachers. So the 2014 overhaul sought to eliminate a $9.4 billion unfunded pension liability in two of those four funds by cutting benefits and increasing contributions. So
I got a question, Bob.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the local Chicago pension fund, all right? So
right.
Is that like if you're any kind of public employee, any kind of public pension in the state of Illinois, be it county, city, state, school?
There was actually
the Constitution says that they're guaranteed.
Right. There was actually a statewide court case that basically said the same thing separately a while back.
So if you have any type of state of government pension within Illinois, I suppose it wouldn't apply to federal employees, of course.
Right.
But, you're guaranteed, your pension is guaranteed by the Constitution.
By the Constitution of the state of Illinois, yes. Okay.
Cause I was wondering if it was only state employees, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, it says workers, retirees, and labor unions sued, saying the Illinois Constitution protects retirement benefits. Novak agreed, citing an Illinois Supreme Court ruling earlier this year that said similar changes to state pension funds were unconstitutional.
But,
so, courts have ruled in favor of both statewide and city pensions at this point in time.
Yeah, this is kind of a case, too. Look who's suing and paying for the lawyers and everything. It was the unions.
Yeah.
And, folks, there's where your fair share comes in, because that covers all their people who didn't join the union, too.
Right.
They're going to guaranteed their pension.
Right, right. Billions of dollars worth of stuff, you know. So that was two of the four pensions in the Chicago area. And then the teachers is a separate one, evidently, too. So there's another $7 billion underfunded in the teachers' pension in Chicago. So interesting stuff up there, you know.
I got something here from Washington.
Good.
And it's a personal annoyance of me because I'm a laborer. A lot of my work is road related. And it used to be that the highway funding bill was a slam dunk because everybody gets money.
Right.
Okay. But lately, last several years, the Republicans have been using it to obstruct over and over again because they don't really care about the roads that you drive on, apparently. All they care about is making their points and coercing people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is from the Hill website, and it's by Alexander Bolton. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell persuaded 14 Democrats to switch their votes on a six-year highway deal by agreeing to drop a controversial provision affecting Social Security. McConnell agreed to scrap an offset that would have raised $2.3 billion by stopping the payment of Social Security benefits to people with felony warrants, according to McConnell's spokesman, Don Stewart. Stewart added that other tweaks have also been made, quote, tweaks, also have been made to the bill, which will be unveiled Thursday morning. Democrats objected to the Social Security offset as a dangerous precedent that might have emboldened Congress to raid Social Security funds in the future for other spending priorities. Quote, I don't know of any time in our history when the Senate has taken money out of the Social Security fund and put it in some other public purpose, said Senator Sherrod Brown, a Democrat of Ohio. It's outrageous. House Democrats also opposed a Social Security provision, which would have made passage of the Senate bill in the lower chamber much harder because a significant number of House Republicans have already complained about its offset covering only 3 years instead of the full six. Man, this is all confusing as heck with this Social Security, man.
Yeah.
The bill now has a strong momentum after 14 Democrats, 2 independents, and 46 Republicans voted in favor of a procedural motion on the bill in the Senate Wednesday evening. The successful vote came a day after a similar vote failed. My major point with this is I'm getting really tired of these games.
Yeah.
You know, if a bill is good, it's a good bill. Quit throwing these poison pills in on it. I wish we had some kind of constitutional, maybe that might be a constitutional amendment to stop these kinds of practices.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it would be worded. I'm not a lawyer, but I think it's immensely destructive.
Yeah.
You know, to society as, I mean, the world as a whole.
Yeah.
To be doing these things. I mean, let these bills pass on their merits because there's people, I mean, it's not just the workers, these contractors.
Yeah.
Depend on getting this money and these payments. They bid these jobs, right? There was a job. I had a job a couple of weeks ago, and this contractor had another bridge job here in town. Hey, here's our call. But anyway, they couldn't do it because the money hadn't been allocated yet because of politics.
Yep. So here's our caller, and we'll go right to the phones here.
So I got laid off.
I hear you. Hello, you're on the air. Is this Dr. Pamela Gronemeyer?
Hi, it is. How are you doing today?
Excellent, excellent. It's we're pleased to have you here on the World Labor Hour on WEFT here in Champaign. And you're going to talk a little bit this week about Medicare, and its 50th anniversary is coming up. Is that correct?
Oh, yes, it is. It's pretty exciting. Medicare is now eligible for ARP.
Yeah. There you go, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure ARP was sending out some membership cards. Yeah, they probably get inundated in the mail with that. So,
that's right.
So, yeah, I think, what is the date coming up, like July 30th or something like
it's
that?
July 30th, yeah. It was signed July 30th, 1965, by Lyndon Johnson signed it, and Harry Truman was the first person who got a Medicare card.
Really?
Harry Truman was?
Harry Truman was the first person, right.
That's cool.
Did it have like number one or was it 0000000?
I don't know whether Adina got not a number one, but he was probably, you know, he probably should have gotten a little number one because he was the first one to get access to a great system.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, 50 years ago, just about this week or whatnot. So,
right.
There's a lot of celebrate.
Oh, somebody's already searched it.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
There's a lot of celebrations going on and things like that, correct?
Right, there are celebrations over 25 U.S. cities, and actually, I think in Illinois, I don't know. I'm saying we have the largest birthday card for Medicare, because we put up a billboard on highways northbound 55 right before the new Douglas Livingston exit. So it's in Madison County, Illinois, and it's a billboard that says, Happy 50th Birthday Medicare, Protect, Improve, and Expand It.
Hey,
so we're pretty excited about that, but there are activities throughout the country. There's one big one in Chicago, and everybody's trying to make sure that we remind people how important Medicare is, how we need to make sure we protect it. We don't let it get privatized. We don't let it get anyone try to turn it into a privately run insurance company, and that we try to improve it, making sure we're picking up, you know, making sure we get people that who are on Medicare can't afford the deductibles and the copays, and that would like to expand it to as many people as possible.
Excellent. Yeah. My understanding is the overall theme is kind of Medicare is as American as apple pie.
And
That PIE, you mentioned it already. Why don't you tell the listeners again what the PIE stands for?
Yeah, it's for Protect, Improve, and Expand. And everybody who's going to a lot of the celebrations throughout the country will be giving out free apple pie.
Oh, wonderful.
Because we want to make sure that, you know, that people, that bite of apple pie reminds them how good Medicare is for everybody.
Yeah, why don't we go back to the beginning, and why was Medicare first implemented here in the United States? There was a lot of poverty among seniors and things like that.
Well, at that time, at the age of 65, it's pretty hard to get insurance, and it's pretty hard to be able to afford insurance. So in 1965, it turned out that there were a lot of elderly people who didn't have money to have health insurance, and actually, once you get sick, you know, once the older you get, the more likely you are to start having health issues. So there were a lot of people who were dying in poverty or couldn't get access to health care because there was no, insurance plan that they could afford. I mean, because between you and me, if you know that even if you cap how much you're spending on insurance, it's, and you're not allowed to have pre-existing conditions, which exist now under the ACA, your rates still go up because of your age going up.
Excuse me. I'm a building trades worker. I work on construction jobs. I'm Bill. And, anyway, I had a job recently, and the boss on this job, he was a carpenter, and he had been retired, and I'm not exactly sure how old he was, but he apparently wasn't old enough yet for Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
And reason he came back to work was because his health insurance is $900 a month, and he had to come back to work for that. And years ago, I knew a guy who was a construction superintendent. He was a carpenter also, and his family had a farm, and he really wanted to quit that and go back to the family farm. But the reason he stayed as a construction superintendent with all the headaches was because of the health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a small business owner, and I have provide insurance for my employees and their beneficiaries. But since I am now 62, the rate that I would have to pay for my health insurance for my small plan is like $1,500 a month.
Wow, $1,500 just for yourself?
Just for myself.
Yeah.
That would be just because of my age, and that's without you can't be rated for pre-existing conditions or be denied. But that's just me.
I thought age was one.
No. Yeah, well, unfortunately, I'm a healthy 62-year-old, but it's just that people don't realize how expensive health insurance would be. And, the voucher system, some people are suggesting we have a voucher system or we go to privatizing Medicare. Your vouchers wouldn't go very far.
No.
Medicare works. I'm a physician, and as a physician, I know that if Medicare will pay, they publish a fee schedule that they honor. They talk to the patients and the providers in the same fashion and tell us all the same things. So we're all, I know that if I write a clean claim for a Medicare bill, I will be paid in a certain amount of time, unlike many insurance companies.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. And it gets even more expensive if you have a family and stuff like that. I'm sure those premiums we're talking about double or triple.
Oh, they do. That's for sure.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say that you know you'll get paid. You just have to wait on that. And sometimes with other insurance companies, they're going to contest those payments, drag things out for months or years, and physicians can end up waiting forever, or like you said, maybe never even get paid.
No, and Medicare's, I mean, is Medicare on a claim that is correct, coded right, and all the, everything, you know, all the information is right, they pay us, you know, in a 30-day period.
Yeah,
and like I said, it's a fee schedule, so it's all set.
Yeah, the other day I got a statement from my health insurance, on a bill that they just paid from a visit that I made over a year ago.
Wow.
An office visit I'd made over a year ago, and they just paid the bill.
Wow.
That's not uncommon. That's why we have to have, you know, we have, I mean, on my, when I do my billing, my billing ledgers, it shows how many days out and how they are. I mean, I have some that are still more than 300 days out. And there are claims that I believe are, you know, there are claims I did the work, and we did it right and correctly and coded it right, and we're still waiting for payment.
Wow. Yeah. 50 years, and there's going to be big celebrations in Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C., there's going to be a, on the 30th, they're going to have a lobby day, and PNHP, Petition for National Health Program, Health Care Now, and the Labor Unions for Single Payer are going to have a lobby day on the 30th, where they're going to, and they're going to meet in the, I'm not exactly sure all the details because that sort of came up not relatively a short time ago.
Right.
But if you can go to Labor Unions for Single Payer, or you can go to Health Care Now, or the Physicians for a National Health Program, and access information about it. But they're also planning on going to visit their congressmen and their senators. And it's not only because, you know, the beauty of Medicare is that as a single payer asset, I think we should have Medicare for all, that we could afford to provide health insurance from everybody in the United States from the time they're born till the time they die. But so it's important, Medicare is important now to celebrate because we'd like single payer for all, but it's also important now to make sure we protect it because as people have heard, Medicare has made the news more than one time this week by some of the candidates.
We were going to bring that up. Yeah, you know, Jeb Bush kind of stuck his foot in his mouth this week, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. I mean, he said he wants to, I'm trying to think exactly how he phrased it. He wants to not suspend it, but he wants to modify it or change it or
he wants
or
to
pause it.
Phase out Medicare is what
phase
it says
it, that's
here.
Right. Phase you know. It, right, right. He wants, yeah. He wants to phase it out or he wants to, and then he modified it a little bit. But what he also wants to do is he talked about, charging different, you know, people who have different levels of income after retirement, charging them different rates. The only problem is then that's no longer an insurance plan.
Right.
It's more like a welfare plan. And, I mean, and realistically, it's better if we all sort of get charged the same rates so everybody will believe they're buying into it and getting an equal return for it.
Right.
Yeah, and speaking of that, it would also be nice if people like Jeb Bush would pay their fair share instead of everything being capped at $118,300 for FICA. You know, and also,
yeah.
These people who just live on investments, they don't pay anything into it. You know,
well, for Social Security, right. I mean, you know, actually, I mean, Social Security, like Medicare, is an insurance plan. And I mean, Social Security, if they raise, there are many people who, if they raise the cap, would go along with it. I mean, my husband and I, we would be eligible for a higher cap or whatever. And I mean, it's only the best thing to do because we need a social safety net in this country to protect people.
My thing is, and I'm just sick of the media because I spend a lot of time just explaining to people about this cap they don't know anything about. People that are paying 12.4% of their income, which is quite a burdensome tax.
Right.
You know, and then these other people are getting off by paying just an infinitesimally small amount because they make so much money. And then all the money that's made on investments, that nothing comes out of that into it. If we taxed all the income in this country, man, I could have retired 10 years ago probably. You know, or something. It's just ridiculous.
No, I mean, it's just part of the fear that they create about that people try to create about the fact that Social Security is becoming insolvent and that Medicare are, and they're not. I mean, and realistically, a lot could be done if you cap, if you raise the cap on Social Security. I mean, you know, and there are many people in the country who, I mean, not, who make more than the cap who agree with me that that's what we should do. It's just that it has to be put forth in Congress and it has to be pushed on and people have to start realizing, you know, what we're talking about. I mean, a lot of what we do in the Illinois Single Payer Coalition of Physicians for National Health Program is we try to educate people. And it's, you know, because the media is not giving us the full information. We need to learn, you know, educate people about what the truth is, not the facts that are, you know, the false facts that are on TV or radio.
Yeah.
Well, and it's just, I wish you luck at it because everybody I meet under the age of 50, for sure, there's not going to be any Social Security, you know.
Yeah. Well, but that's partially, they create fear and actually generational fear. Because,
yes.
I mean, right now, everything I do is not so much that I'm worried about myself, because hopefully my husband and I have taken care of ourselves, but I'm worried about the future kids. I would like this country to be the way it was when I, in the 60s and 70s, where if you worked hard and you did well in school, you could get an education that you could afford and you could, were able to, you know, move up, you know, you could move up economically and educate, you know, education-wise. But the problem is I see that we're making limitations on how people can, you know, with wealth inequality, we're making limitations on how far people can go and how much they can do. And, I mean, I want to make sure I keep Social Security for the kids in the future and Medicare for kids in the future. I don't want to rob them. I want to make sure that we leave them something that's a pot of money that will continue to grow and be there for them.
Yep. And we're here on the World Labor Hour. We have our guest on the phone with us, Dr. Pamela Gronemeyer. And we're mainly concentrating on Medicare and the 50th anniversary of Medicare coming up this week, Thursday, July 30th, and some issues about Social Security and whatnot. So is there any kind of rallies happening down by Edwardsville and stuff like that? I know you mentioned the big billboard up there, the biggest happy birthday card.
Well, we put the billboard up, and tomorrow, actually, at the Cardinals game at 1:15, there's going to be a group of people who are coming from St. Louis and the metropolitan and the Metro East area who are supporting Medicare. And we're going to be seated in one portion of the ballpark, and we're going to have an announcement on the over the overhead announcement, and we're also going to have it on the screen, Happy Birthday Medicare, and we're going to bring our signs. So we're going to root for the Cardinals and root for Medicare. Next week we're having, on Thursday the 30th, there's going to be an event at the Ethical Society in St. Louis, and it's going to be a musical celebration for Medicare, and they're going to have, this is in Clayton, on Clayton Road in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're also having the 30th, my group, the Southern Illinois People for Progress, is showing the healthcare movie at the library in Edwardsville. So we've tried to, you know, come up. Plus, I actually have 100-yard signs that we're going to be spreading around the community.
Good.
To remind people it's the birthday.
I know there's National Nurses United have a bunch of events planned in various cities around the country: Boston, Chicago, Detroit. Las Vegas, Los Angeles, Miami, so we can urge people to get out and look for local events in your area, and get out there and support Medicare as it turns 50. And,
The one in Chicago is going to be at Humana. And it's going to be from 11:30 to 2:00 at the Humana offices.
Oh, excellent.
And then you can access it by going to the Illinois Single Payer Coalition website. And find out about it. And there's a Facebook page about it, too.
Wonderful.
So I think that they've got quite a few, you know, that's going to be Nurses United, Physicians for National Health Program, Illinois Single Payer Coalition, and other groups that have gotten together to work to make it an event that people will, you know, we want people to know what's happening. We want to, you know, my billboard, or the billboard we put up, according to the man who sold me the billboard for a month, seen by 40,000 people a day.
Wow. Four.
And I mean, even if five of them look over there an hour and see the billboard, which will be lit at night, maybe it will make them think, you know, well, maybe I need to, you know, I think sometimes we take things for granted and people don't even realize that Medicare is a governmental, is a governmental program that works.
Definitely works, yep.
Well, you know, there was one word that you heard a lot more than, and people had a lot more of a feel for it when you're talking about the 60s and 70s, and that was the word public. You know, public utilities, things done for the public, by the public, working together through the mechanism of government because it's something that, that we can do that with.
Yeah. And again, the theme, for these events coming up is Medicare is as American as apple pie, and that pie stands for protect, improve, and expand Medicare to cover everyone.
That's right, folks. Let's make that pie bigger. Tell everybody about the $118,000 limit, and that's one way we could make this pie bigger. Just lifting that limit even a little bit would be amazing.
Sounds good to me.
Dr. Gronemeyer, we really appreciate you calling into the Labor Hour here on WEFT in Champaign. Any other closing words or comments?
No, just everybody, just spread the word. And if you tell one person a day or 10 people a day about Medicare, just keep reminding them that we need to talk about it, hold on to it, and not let anybody privatize it. Or try to turn it into an investment or try to turn it into anything. I mean, it works well the way it is. I mean, so, you know, we want to keep it the way it is, make it better than it is, and expand it.
Wonderful. Well, thanks again for calling into the show. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me on your show, and have a good day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And I think we'll go to a quick musical break here, one of our favorites. Ann Feeney doing National Health Care Now.
Daddy was born 10 weeks too soon. Told baby in the ICU. Could have saved a dollar if he spent a dime.
That's Ann Feeney, friend of the show. She's been on the show several times, just recently, I think maybe 6 months ago, 5 months ago. Anyway, we're back here on the World Labor Hour. Another one of our co-hosts has joined us here, Angela. She said she wanted to mention something about the woman down in Texas.
Yeah, the Sandra Bland lady.
Yeah.
She was pulled over, and they, what the man told her to put her cigarette out and everything.
Yeah.
And told her she was under arrest. And what I didn't like about the whole thing is that they took her from in front of the dash cam to take her on the side, and you could hear her saying that he had hit her head on the ground.
Wow.
And she said that she had epilepsy.
Wow.
But, I mean, you can't see anything. I thought they were supposed to keep you in front of it so that they could see everything that's going on there.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
But the worst part about it is when she took her mugshot, she was dead on the mugshot.
Hmm.
Yeah, I've seen that story. There's another interesting thing that Tom Hartman was talking about a couple of days ago. And according to the district, according to him, the autopsy report shows like a really high amount of cannabis
in
her system
yeah.
at the time.
Yeah.
You know, after being incarcerated for 3 days.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, levels, you can test positive for a long time on pot, but the levels do vary.
They drop fairly quickly, yeah.
Up and down.
I thought an amazing part of that audio from that was that she says to the cop, and you can hear it, she says, "You sped up behind me, so I pulled over to get out of your way, and that's when you pulled me over for not signaling a lane change," you know? And it's like, sounds to me like she was just trying to get out of the cop's way, you know?
Well, yeah, and it's obvious, too. I mean, I've seen this before. It's happened to me. Sometimes it happens in these small towns. You come through town, and you're the only car on the road, you know, at night especially. And that cop, he'll pull right out, and they'll follow you all the way to the edge of town.
Oh, yeah.
You know, waiting on you to do – and there's been a lot of times where I've done something, and I knew it, and the cop still followed me all the way to the town limit just to see if I'd do something else.
Right, right.
You know?
Yeah.
And, which, by the way, if you think somebody is driving bad enough you want to pull them over, then don't you think it's a safety issue about, you know, following them farther?
Yeah.
Okay, but I mean, yeah, this is obvious is what it was. He was fishing.
Yep.
Illinois plates.
Yeah.
You know, African-American woman. You know, and I think it was a respectable, nice car, too.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
yes, definitely was.
So that's right there. Well, that's she. How could she have a nice car?
Yeah,
you know? I mean, that's what I've driven down.
Sad. Oh. She was only 28 years old.
Yeah.
Well, I've driven down 57, and I haven't seen this for a while. This is a few years ago. This is the Illinois State Police. I remember one day I was driving down there. I think it was a Saturday. I was going to Rantoul to visit somebody, and I saw at least two cars pulled over. All their stuff out, African-American families, nice cars, respectable-looking people, you know, and it was just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's still a race issue, you know.
Yep, yep. Hey, we're going to open up the phones here, too, for the last couple minutes of the show. So if you want to give us a call, 359-5483 or 359-6545, we can get a few other comments from listeners on the air.
Okay, I do want to say there's something that's come up over the last few weeks with the Black Lives Matter and all this about police killings and all that. And it's in the left milieu, you might say, the leftoverse, you know, on the internet and everywhere. People getting into the old identity versus class politics dichotomy. So if anybody would have a comment on that, that would be interesting.
Sure.
The way I'm looking at it, you know, they're two different dimensions of a person's life, and they overlap to some respect. But, you know, Henry Louis Gates gets hassled for going into his house. Who's more middle class than a professor?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, this girl down in Texas worked for the university or something, too, didn't
right.
she?
She was, I think she was speaking a little bit. She was somebody.
Yeah, she had just gotten a job, I believe, and it was at her alma mater. And I can't remember the name of the school. It's one I had not heard of.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, she had a good life coming up. She was an activist.
She was an activist. She was involved with Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. So, you know, they don't, you know, people don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think that's probably one of the things that aggravated the cop was that when she said, "You don't have the right to do this
right.
stuff,"
she
you
was
know,
speaking her mind, and I guess, I mean, I don't know. I guess you're supposed to not say anything. But see, I had a run in. They stopped me about a month ago. And when he stopped me, he said that he stopped me for not stopping completely at the stop sign. But it lets me get way
and
down.
One of those turned into an illegal transportation of alcohol ticket once.
We got a caller calling in here, so let's see if we can squeeze him on the air here in the last couple of minutes here. So,
yep, and rolling stop signs.
Hello, you're on the World Labor Hour.
Jim Iman.
Hey, Jim.
Yeah, well, we're all wishing Dave Johnson a happy birthday.
Hey, there you go. Yeah, happy birthday, Dave.
Happy birthday.
The problem here is that the states run Medicaid, and it, yeah. Nationally, you've got Medicare. Now, in the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, there's a $200 million deduction from Medicare.
$200
million, which means your copay is going to go up.
My copay would go up a lot if it was $200 million.
Yeah, that's that. They snuck that one in there. And, of course, Medicaid is run by the states. You know, they can either opt in or opt out. One of the southern states opted out.
Right.
And I know for at least in my colleague and our friend Pamela Carsey, if Medicaid goes, she's not going to be able to afford this medicine that she has to take. It's almost $1,000 a month.
Wow.
Yeah, you're right, Jim. And I know a lot of people who do work, but they're afraid and they'll make too much money and they'll lose their Medicaid because they have to have that Medicaid, and any work that they would have wouldn't replace it at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And you know what? The more you make, the less care you get.
And as far as the Canadian system, Harper's starting to privatize that.
Right.
The same thing's going on in England with the Tories.
Yeah.
They're breaking it down slowly.
Really?
Yeah. So it's not just a state thing or a national thing. It's a European thing as well.
Well, then a lot of people need to step up on July 30th and wish Medicare a happy 50th birthday and work towards, as they're saying, make it as American as apple pie, protect it, improve it, and expand it.
And support.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Make that pie bigger.
There you go.
Yeah, right. Power to the people. Thank you for taking my call.
There you go.
The pie.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Jim. All right. Any closing words from anybody this week?
$118,300. Keep that number. Spread it around.
There you go. Yeah. Angela?
Support. I mean, if the people don't support and, you know, engage in the activities, then, I mean, we don't have a voice. So, again, everybody should participate.
All right. And as Dave Johnson would say, be safe and power to the people. And we're going to leave you with a little bit of a track here from Walter Trout.
Yeah.
They call us working class, but we ain't working anymore. So
Walter.
Here you go on the World Labor Hour. Thanks for listening.
Sort of the same as the opening song.